dive and scuba gear. It's always a lot of fun, and it's at a great spot at the museum, so I hope everybody can get down there and just look around and buy something and go to the museum. And I think that's it. Thank you.
All right, wonderful. Thank you. Member Dowdy?
Yes, I guess you can't see this, but I'm going to pass down what is a what was a bolt at one time. I do a lot of work on the docks along the waterfront, and these bolts are probably 25 years old, and they all look like stalactites. So my guess is there's a lot of deferred maintenance that needs to be addressed on the docks there. Out on the bay itself, because we've had so much wind, there hasn't been a whole lot of activity, but because of the wind, we're getting these cold water upwellings, and lots of baby anchovies and jack smelt are showing up in the bay. You're seeing the cormorants moving in. So it's springtime or summertime, and the bait's showing up, and I saw a halibut fisherman this morning trying to get a halibut. And on the enchiladas, the albacore, the green enchiladas are the best. Okay, that's it.
All right, thank you. All right, so for my announcements, the chamber has been, Morro Bay Chamber has been very active. They have begun a monthly breakfast on the bay. It costs $20 to $25 per session, discounts for members, and getting annual passes. It's a great way to start the day with local food and beverages and to connect with local leaders and different events. The next Breakfast on the Bay is May 18th. On May 16th, Monday, they are hosting a candidate mixer at 5:30. So look on their website for that. It has the two city council candidates that will have a time to both speak. This weekend is the Cruisin' Morro Bay Car Show, like Jeremiah mentioned. I'm glad to have it back in all its glory. I'm sure it will be a welcome gathering around cars in the sun, although it might be a little windy, so bring a windbreaker and enjoy. The yard sale is May 14th through the 15th, so that's a fun time to drive around Morro Bay. Central Coast Lift just had their ribbon cutting, the grand opening. So thank you, Nick, for bringing an exciting new way to enjoy our beautiful ocean, and that's very appreciated. And it's a nice way to encounter the harbor and the bay, or the ocean. Yeah, I'm not nervous. Okay, so back to Morro Bay has lost another treasure in the community, George League. My father-in-law and mentor passed away last month over a long battle with cancer. His impact on Morro Bay was as a businessman, city councilman. He contributed greatly to the local economy, church, and as a civil servant. Never shy to tell you how it is and to speak up and act for what you believe in for the common good of our community he loves so much. His memorial service is open to the public. It's on May 20th at 1:00 at Rock Harbor Church, with everyone meeting after at the Harbor Hut Restaurant for food and sharing memories. Thank you for giving me that opportunity to say that. And with that, we will move on to the next thing, which is presentations. Do we have a presentation today? So the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, are they going to do it over Zoom? Perfect. Okay, we'll start with that.
Yep. Dwayne Oberhoff from the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund should be online, and I'll be running his PowerPoint for him. AGP, can you let Dwayne in?
Appears to be muted.
Dwayne? Dwayne, are you muted?
Press the star key and then the number 6 key, it should unmute you.
Hey, you guys hear me now?
Yes, we...
Okay, not sure what was going on there. I was not on mute, but all right. You guys at any time can't hear me very well, just let me know. I'll move my phone around or whatever it takes. So my name is Dwayne Oberhoff. I'm the executive director of the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund and have been since, I believe, 2016. We come in every so often to provide the an update to the Harbor Advisory Board, and it sounds like since the last time we were there, which I'm not exactly sure when that was, maybe a year and a half ago, or might have been before COVID, maybe it's actually during COVID. It sounds like there's a handful of new board members, so I think this is a good opportunity to provide. It's going to just be more informational. There is some more. There is some updated information in my slide presentation, which I think Eric will move through as I go through the presentation. A lot of the stuff is some older slides, so some of the older board members will have seen this before. So, all right, Eric. So, can you hear me, Eric?
Yep. Gotcha.
Okay. So let's just go to the second slide then.
You're good.
So, good. Thank you. So the quota fund. I'm gonna kind of talk a little bit about the quota fund, then kind of get into the history of the fishery, and then kind of go back to the quota fund. Hopefully it ties everything together. So the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund participates or manages fisheries assets, if you want to call them, in the West Coast groundfish fishery, which was previously the groundfish trawl fishery. And just for the new board members, if you're not familiar with groundfish, we're talking about fish like petrolli sole, the different rockfish species, Dover sole, sablefish or black cod. Those are fish that are in this fishery. There's a bunch more what we'll get into in a little bit, but that those are examples just so everybody's on board with the fish that we're chatting about here. Next slide, Eric.
Okay.
Thanks. The history of groundfish fishing in California, and specifically the Central Coast, goes back quite a long time. At one point, the West Coast had 255 million pounds of groundfish landed. And on the Central Coast, we had just enormous amounts of groundfish landed until about the mid-90s, when at some points we had a little bit over 15 million pounds of groundfish landed between Port San Luis and Morro Bay. Part of that increase, or that level of landings, had to do with some policies and programs that kind of allowed fishermen and businesses to increase capacity in the fishery, meaning boats and equipment, and that allowed, you know, millions and millions of pounds to be caught. Well, that, you know, over-reliance or over-capitalization in the groundfish fishery resulted in not all, but numerous groundfish stocks, mainly rockfish, to start coming down. So the fisheries regulators started recognizing that, and in the mid-90s, they started implementing a variety of different things to kind of limit harvest of groundfish, things like trip limits, seasons, bycatch limits, restrictions on gear, and you can kind of see there in this chart in 95, 96, the fishery, as far as landings and revenue, started to decrease. You know, in 93, the fishery went to a limited entry permit system, which, so if you had a history in the fishery and can demonstrate that, you would receive a limited entry permit. And so that was right around the beginning of this. In I think it was the late 90s, maybe it was early 2000s, they implemented a no fishing zones, the rockfish conservation areas. So that was another measure, so a geographic measure to prevent fishing in certain areas that had these overfished rockfish species. And then between like 1999 and 2002, nine different species, which we'll kind of go into in a little bit here, of groundfish were declared overfished in the fishery. Things like canary rockfish, cow cod, yellow eye rockfish. Where am I here? And as the fishery started to decline, as you see in the chart, in 2000, the fishery was declared a disaster by the federal government. And then in 2003, there was an effort to initiate a buyback program. So fishermen, it's basically like a reverse auction. The fishermen basically submitted a number on how much they wanted for their boats and or permits. And if it fell within, I guess, the lower range, the federal government would buy their boats and permits back. And the whole goal of that was to try to reduce some of the capacity in the fishery. And then that was a really big deal. You can see on the chart where that was back in 2003. And then around 2005, the Nature Conservancy came in and kind of did their own buyback program, if you want to say call it that. They basically bought all of the trawl permits in Morro Bay, some of the vessels, and they did that in a few places in California, but in Morro Bay specifically, they bought all of the trawl permits that were here. After that, the landings in Morro Bay kind of hit the lowest level we've ever seen. So in 2007, we had landings that were under 1 million pounds. I think it was around 700 and something thousand pounds. So due to all this, there were people in the fishery, fishermen, some fishermen, obviously not all of them, that wanted something different in this fishery and petitioned for a catchers management structure, which we're going to get into in a little bit. That was started in 2011, and like we can jump into it right now with the next slide, Eric. So in 2011, this groundfish trawl IFQ system started in the fishery, individual fishing quota, and it was supported by some fishermen. It was hated by some, and I still think that extends to today. In the fishery, there are some people supportive of it, some that are not. It basically privatized the fishery, maybe another like way of thinking about it. It basically divides the total amount of the fish to be caught in the fishery, in this case, the groundfish fishery, into shares or quota shares that are held by, you know, individuals or businesses. And, you know, one of the pluses, I guess, of it is the fact that, you know, they can make business decisions based on it, because they know at the beginning of the year or even a year before, they know what kind of quota or how much quota they're going to get for these different species. And they can make some business decisions. They can harvest it more efficiently. They can go out when the weather's better, safer. They can go out and fish and then come back and sell it when the market is better and more profitable. And one of the big aspects of an IFQ system and in this fishery is that these quota shares, which I'm going to get into in a second, more specifically, is that they can be sold or traded. So like if you owned, you know, some quota share for Petrali Sol, you could sell it to somebody else, and then you could take those proceeds and retire or buy some other species quota share that you maybe need more. Next slide, Eric. So a simplified kind of model of cat shares, and I've got a couple of them here. I'll just go through both of them really quick. So you have this like total fish stock in the water, and in this situation, we're talking about ground fish. And it's kind of divided into a couple different sectors. And in this case, just very simply, we have, you know, the commercial and the recreational sectors. Eric, go to the next slide so we can break it down a little bit more. So just moving on from the commercial sector with groundfish specifically, you have then three different other kind of subfisheries within the groundfish fishery. You know, you have open access, what they call limited entry fixed gear, and then you have the fishery that we participate in is the trawl cat shares program, or the IFQ groundfish fishery. Next slide, Eric. And I was mentioning earlier we have these quota shares in the fishery. And so just to kind of quickly go through what a quota share is, if you qualified previously and received a permit from the National Marine Fisheries Service and you were eligible to receive quota shares, it was basically at the time in 2011 a one-time allocation of NAT, which is now transferable. At the time it wasn't, but transferable quota shares. And it basically is a percentage of ownership of the total allowable catch for the year. And that quota share is, it's represented as a percentage, like it says here, but it's expressed annually as quota pounds. And so if you own a certain percentage of one of the species, that doesn't change annually. The only way that changes is if you buy more quota share or sell your quota share. Quota pounds annually does change based on stock assessments and so forth. And so your allocation of chili pepper rockfish one year might be different than a previous year or what you might be allocated in the future. And just to be clear too, these quota pounds are what we receive annually. And so those are transferable too. We can lease them, license them to whoever we want during that specific year. Next slide. So there's quota share for 30 different species in the trawl or the IFQ groundfish fishery. And like I said before, things like petrolli, sablefish, slope rockfish is a complex, other flatfish is a complex. So each of these complexes of fish hold a bunch of other ones. So I don't have the number in my head, but if you added all of them up, it's actually a whole lot more than 30 different species because of these complexes. An interesting aspect of the fishery is that they designed it so that no one person or entity could accumulate more than a specific amount of fish, because they didn't want it all to be transferred and sold and bartered and accumulated in one or two or whatever, five different entities. So they created this accumulation limit. It's basically 2.7% of QS holdings with, like I said, the goal of preventing consolidation. Beyond that, there is additional accumulation limits per species. Next slide. This is just the list of the species or species complexes we deal with. We'll get into it here in a second, but a person in the or a business or fisherman in the fishery could own quota share for some or none of these species. I mean, they could just own a couple, or they could have a very large portfolio. And in a second here, I'll show you, we'll get into what the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund holds, and we can talk more about it. Next slide. So I just wanted to kind of show how this quota share or quota pounds actually works. This is just an example of one species that you saw in the previous slide, and this is cowcod rockfish. And you can see Morro Bay Community Quota Fund owns 17.7%. And in this year, I'm not sure what year this was, this might have been a couple years ago, that equated to 607 pounds of fish. This year, that 17.7 pounds of fish, actually, sorry, let me say last year, equated to, bear with me here, I'm going to try to find my sheet here that has that information. So last year, that was around 7,800 pounds. So you see that even though the percentages stay the same, when the allocations change, the allocated quota pounds will fluctuate according to that. So you can see that species is considered was considered overfished at one time. We'll talk more about that in a second. But now as it recovers, it's more and more quota pounds are becoming available in the fishery annually. Next slide. The other thing that regulators did was to have these control limits in the fishery to prevent anybody from owning a large amount of any one species. And so you see different percentages here. So, you know, like say Sablefish South, which is our area down here on the Central Coast, Morro Bay area, any one person or business entity can only own 10% That's the control limit. So we, the quota fund, we do have a full control, or we have a full control limit of southern sable fish. We do own 10%, and we do own the max shown here on a handful of different species, like Boccaccio rockfish, cow cod, and a few others. So what's interesting is once we reach those limits for the individual species, we can't get any more, but then we also have to be really aware of what we hold cumulatively for the accumulation limits for that 2.7% that you see at the bottom right-hand side. So there's two numbers that we're always looking at, trying to maximize our portfolio. And I'll probably talk a little bit about some stuff we've done recently to maximize the portfolio. So really quick, so the accumulation limits and the control limits kind of were set into place to prevent from people from holding and controlling too much of individual species or the overall groundfish quota share. But one of the concerns, next slide, Eric, is the movement of quota share. And, you know, what we've seen on the Central Coast before this, the IFQ program started, was a lot of quota share, especially from Port San Luis, basically migrating to the north. And even though they're you know, they have to follow the people that bought it, where it was transferred, to have to follow these accumulation and control limits. But because the industry for this fishery, meaning like processors and buyers, are more centralized up there, it's very easy for these fishery assets to migrate north. And there's not much we can do about that. You know, the stuff can be bought and sold. Fortunately, the quota that the quota fund holds is anchored here. So the stuff that we have hasn't left here, except for some of it. Some of it has, but I'll get into that in a little bit. It's species that we weren't utilizing before. So next slide, Eric. So this is just a repeat of annual quota pounds as we jump into some of these numbers here. Like I said, it's annual. You receive it annually based on quota shares, and they can be sold or licensed. You can't really sell quota pounds, but you license it annually in a specific year. Next slide. So there's some hurdles in the fishery, a handful of different hurdles. One of them has to do with like vessel limits. You're only allowed to catch so much per year. Previously, when we had a lot of overfished species, some of those limits were very, very low, you know, literally 100 or 200 pounds for a specific species. And there have been occurrences where a boat has gone out fishing, caught in excess of the annual vessel limit, and we're completely done for the year. And in one case, I believe a boat caught so much that they were actually done for, I think it was 2 years. And I believe they caught canary. They must have caught so much canary at the time when the limits were lower. They were effectively out of the fishery for a couple years. Next slide, Eric. So initially when the fishery started in 2011, we had a handful of overfished species. Allocations were extremely low. And, you know, the situation I said a second ago where somebody could go out and catch, you know, a large amount in one tow or one set was a scary thought. But since then, you know, with the fishery being managed the way it is, with, you know, 100% accountability, human observers on board, catch monitors on the dock, and all of the other on the water regulations, the fishery is starting to return the overfished species. Next slide, Eric. The overfish species are rebounding big time. So in the previous slide, you saw a bunch of yellow or whatever color that is on your screen, orange lines going across showing the different overfish species. There's really only one left, yellow eye. And if you look at some of the percent increases from 2011 to 2020, like say for the second and third species on this list, you know, they increased, you know, almost 1,200% for Boccaccio. I'm sorry, the quota pounds did for the sector, 1,200% almost. And then for canary, you know, over 3,300%. If you go down to Widow Rockfish at the toward the bottom, they've increased allocation from 11 to 20 by over 2,600%. So I don't have a time frame on when yellow eye will be deemed recovered, but it's on its way there too. Next slide. These are some older tables I put together. Even though it looks old, fisheries data is always kind of backlogged. So the only data that I have access to now that I could update these two tables with that I'm about to show you is 2019. So I could get three more years in here. This is like what's happened since 2007 up to 16. You can see that there was an increase, but this isn't really painting the right picture because this is like everything in Morro Bay. So let's go to the next slide, Eric, and let's get rid of squid landings because from 2007 to 2016, there was like 13 million pounds of squid landed, which fluctuates annually. So getting rid of that species kind of helps, you know, give a better picture. You can see here all the way through 2011 value and landings went up. It came down a little bit through 2015 and went back up in 16. I haven't put together the 17, 18, and 19, but maybe here next time we do a presentation for the board, we can get this updated and see where we are at that time, I think hopefully for 2020. Next slide, Eric. So let's jump into a little some stuff about the quota fund. So it was set up in 2014 with the mission, I'll just read it on the screen, you guys can see it, but the mission to develop and enhance a financially and environmentally sustainable Morro Bay fishery built upon local stewardship of ground fish resources and secured fishing rights anchored in the community. Next slide. So, I mean, the big question is how does the Morro Bay Quota Fund accomplish this? Here's a handful of bullets we can go through. So we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We have a full set of bylaws. We're governed by a diverse board of directors. Currently, the Quota Fund's president is Eric there. And we have a Cal Poly professor, Chris Kubiak, and a handful of other people. We are trying to think. Ed Backus up in Oregon, Andrea Luker, who used to be I always forget her position at Port San Luis. Not harbor master, maybe? from Port San Luis.
Port manager.
And Jeremiah O'Brien, who there is on the Harbor Advisory Board, are all on our board of directors. So we further on, we accomplish our mission by we work with existing fishermen, new entrants, with the focus of like who's going to land in Morro Bay, Port San Luis, mainly, you know, obviously the two Central Coast ports here. Interestingly enough, you know, I'll talk more about this in a little bit, but we don't get a lot of inquiries because it's just a complicated fishery to participate in. But today I did get a phone call from somebody locally that was interested. And so I will continue to chat with that person to see if it's the right fishery for them to participate in. We also, like I said earlier, we own these assets. We own a handful of limited entry trawl permits, and we have quota share that generates quota pounds annually that we are able to lease to fishermen at reduced rates. We have a leasing policy in place where we lease the local fishermen as a priority. Fishermen that have invested into their operations with the purchase of new boats, purchasing their own permits or quota share, things like that. We focus on beyond that. If we don't have interest from local fishermen, we try to work with at least secondarily with California fishermen. And new entrants, especially if they're a new entrant and they're local, would be right up there at the top of the list for a priority to lease quota from us. We also have a research fund. And we contribute 50% of our net revenue into the research fund annually. It has grown quite a bit. We are in the process right now of working through creating an RFP for dispersal of research grants. That will probably be happening at some point this year. I don't have a time frame right now, but we're working through that. Next slide, Eric. So just some compliments accomplishments to date for the quota fund. So we've successfully anchored quota, huge amount of quota and permits in Morro Bay. We've worked with four different local fishermen since 2014. Since 2014, approximately 2.4 million pounds of the quota that we hold have been landed in Morro Bay. Let's see, quota licenses to other fishery participants. So we have not so much now because we sold some of our quota share because it was stuff that we didn't fish locally. We couldn't fish it locally just because of the way the fishery is set up. So we then and even still today lease some of our quota pounds out of Morro Bay to other fishermen that need it. It basically allows or puts these needed quota pounds into the fishery, and it generates revenue for the quota fund for us to do things like our research fund. To date, this has been a few years, but we've had over $16,000 in grants go out through our research fund. This next round of research grants will be quite a bit more than that. To date, we've also provided $5,000 in relief money to a fisherman that desperately needed it. In 2021, we leased about 14% of our quota pounds locally. That number fluctuates every year. It's been much higher in the past. Right now, last year was 14%. I imagine this year will probably be about the same. And from a business standpoint, even though we're a nonprofit, we're still an operating business like anybody else, any other business. So you know, we've been operating in the black every year. We have a 6-month operating reserve, and I think we're in a good spot from a business standpoint to keep being productive. Next slide, Eric. So this is a really important slide. This is where we it's kind of a summary where we struggle with trying to find new people or fishermen to participate in the fishery. There's 100% mandatory monitoring in this fishery, so every fish that comes over the rail has to be accounted for, and that is either through human observers or electronic monitoring, which are like cameras on board. When the fishery started, it was basically only human observers, and now human observers, it was cheaper then, but now there are about 600 or more a day to have these observers on board. So you can imagine having, you know, going out for a 3-day trip, you know, you're probably close to $2,000 just for the observer to be on board. Then on top of that, there's these different taxes or fees that you have to pay. There's a 3.5% buyback loan that you have to pay on your landings, 3% fee on your landings to basically fund the program, which even if you didn't want the program, you still have to pay 3% to fund it. Because of all this stuff, because of the observers and fees and everything, it's really hard to attract local boats to small operations. And then overall in the fishery, I don't have it updated, but you can see the numbers are down. You know, in 2011, there were 110 vessels participating. In 2017, it was down to 98. I haven't got a new number. I can get that though and see what it is. But I would expect that number to have gone down since 2017. And overall in the fishery, there's a low coastwide utilization on the quota pounds annually. So in 2016, there was about a 22% utilization. What that means is like the quota pounds that are available every year, only about 22% of it was harvested in 2016. I updated the slide today for this presentation, and it's actually gone up to 25, which actually, I think in 2017, it was 24%. So it's actually gone up a little bit, which I find interesting and hopefully continues to go up. Next slide, Eric. So some of our efforts in the fishery, both historic and current. So we provided feedback during the 5-year review of the IFQ program. Through this community advisory board, basically to, you know, talk with regulators and give them our feedback, along with there was other people obviously participating on how the fishery is going and recommendations on how to improve the fishery. We supported and successfully the refinance of the federal buyback loan. We have supported from day one the use of electronic monitoring in the fishery, because the thought is cameras can do it cheaper than a person on the boat. We're still working through that in the fishery. We funded collaborative research fund, like I said, back in what year was that, 2016. We're going to hopefully do that again this year. We supported a five-year review of essential fish habitat in the Rockfish Conservation Area reconfiguration, which was successful. We're not the only quota fund along the coast. There are a handful of other ones, and we collaborate with those quota funds for a larger voice in the fishery. We're supportive of increased utilization of underutilized species like Dover sole, chili pepper rockfish. You know, those are great fish to eat, and more of them should be coming out of the water and going to schools and prisons or wherever else that, you know, we can get a large amount of fish into. And we support gear innovations, you know, ways to target underutilized fish or ways to target, you know, highly or fish that are really sought after, but do it in a way that, you know, maybe we're not catching some of these, well, this is previously, but overfished species. So there's a variety of different gear innovations that people have tried. Some have been successful, some haven't. Next slide. Like I said a bit ago, there are other quota funds here in California. There's the Monterey Bay Fisheries Trust, Half Moon Bay Commercial Fisheries Trust, the Fort Bragg Groundfish Conservation Trust. And for a while there, we had annual meetings, but COVID kicked in, and we haven't had one here for a few years. We'd probably like to have another one here soon. We've had three, I believe, meetings with these other quota funds to kind of collaborate and discuss what's working for them and what's not. Next slide. So just kind of close it up here. So what can we all do to help? Well, we can always buy U.S. caught wild fish, preferably select locally caught products from, you know, your general area like Morro Bay or Port San Luis. And when available, like buy fish right off the boat, right from the fishermen, you know, and salmon during salmon season right now. We used to be able to do it with albacore when it was a lot was being caught here, but, you know, guys like Jeremiah there on the board, he brings a fish down from Oregon, you know, buying directly from him is an awesome thing. You can always join a community-supported fishery if it's available, not really available here anymore. You can always suggest to your restaurant, you know, and tell your servers, like, hey, you guys should be serving, you know, locally caught salmon or locally caught rockfish. If you can, you always select underutilized species. Sand dabs is a great one. They're delicious. There's millions of them out there. Support programs that get healthy, locally caught fish into food pantries, schools, homeless shelters, prisons, wherever. And I don't know. I mean, tell a friend, you know, support, you can support local fisheries by doing all this, but you can, you know, exponentially get it, the message out there by tell a friend, put it on Facebook, whatever. Next slide, Eric. That's all I have. If anybody has a question or two, let me know. If anybody wants this presentation, I can happy to send it to them or even meet with them in person in Morro Bay and talk through any of the topics here.
All right, thank you very much. I do believe we have some questions from the board. We'll start off with Member Myers.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. One question I have is I know the wind farm that's going up in off the shore of Monterey and then possibly the Kumash Sanctuary is that going to affect the quota fund at all?
Well, those are two different topics. You know, our thought, I think a lot of the fishermen's thought on the sanctuary is that, you know, with the amount of regulations that are out there on the water right now, just having another layer of potential regulations just seems unnecessary. You know, it doesn't really feel like we need that here. I mean, at some point, the way things are going, the entire coastline of California will be a sanctuary. It'll just be just connected sanctuaries up and down the coast. I don't think that the sanctuary is needed in order for habitat protection. That is already explicitly done with these fisheries regulations. As far as the wind farms, you know, we don't have a lot of comment on that. We've deferred to the local fishermen's organization to be the spokespeople for that. We've told them if you want our help or assistance with anything, with your efforts, please let us know. We're more than happy to help with that.
Thank you.
Member Green.
I was curious, is there a major difference with whether it's management or enforcement between quota fund members and non-quota fund members? I think you mentioned like different layers of regulations, and I was kind of curious, just generally speaking, are quota fund members I guess more responsible for the comeback in some of these fishing numbers as opposed to non-members, And if so, is there any way to publicize this offering a little bit more than it is?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there is. You know, everybody has done their part, and to be honest, they've been forced to do their part, and are all responsible for the recovery of, you know, numerous stocks in the groundfish fishery. The regulations that were out there with, you know, trip limits and geographic fishing restrictions, that affected everybody. It didn't just affect the trawl fishery. It affected everybody a little bit differently. Like, there's some different depth restrictions and stuff on where you can fish. But overall, I would contribute it all to everybody fishing in the fishery, doing their part, following the rules, which contributed to it. And just to be clear, too, there's really, like, no membership, really, with the Quota Fund. The fishermen that we work with are just regular fishermen up and down the coast or in Morro Bay. They are just happening to lease their permit and their quota from us, but they participate in the fishery like anybody else, really without our help unless they ask us for it. Like, for example, we're pretty hands-off unless somebody asks, but I've helped numerous fishermen set up the ability to land their fish in Morro Bay, because, not to complicate this more, but when you're fishing in this groundfish IFQ fishery, you can only land your fish at a designated first receiver facility. And you have to have a special first receiver site license to get that. And to get that license, you got to put together this catch monitoring plan. And so I've helped numerous fishermen prepare their catch monitoring plan so that they could have one or more offload facilities in Morro Bay, or even in other areas actually outside of Morro Bay. So the fishermen that we work with, they're just like anybody else. There's no special real membership. I mean, we're happy to work with anybody that's willing to come talk with us.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very, very much, Dwayne, for the great presentation. And I didn't
really... Sorry I couldn't be there tonight.
yeah. It's an opportunity to say hello. And I just kind of wanted to say to everybody else that Dwayne's been our general manager at the Quota Fund for, like he said, since 2016. And he's done an incredible job. I can't only tell you that in listening to him, you can perhaps see how complicated this issue is. And if it sounded complicated, well, I just want everybody to know it's twice as complicated, at least, as it sounds. So
yeah.
Dwayne has been an incredible, has done an incredible job for the Quota Fund. We're very, very happy to have him here. Hope he stays forever. Thank you, Dwayne, very much.
Thanks, Jeremiah. If I have a second more, I just wanted to add one thing I totally forgot to add into my presentation. And we haven't actually publicized this yet at all. But I mentioned earlier on in the presentation that we held quota share for some species that weren't caught in Morro Bay. And in fact, you couldn't catch them here. They were the quota share were for species north of basically Fort Bragg, the 4010 line. So we've sold some of our quota share assets. We took that money and paid off our loan, which basically was a mortgage payment. It was no different. And so we're basically debt-free now when it comes to that, which is a big deal for us, because that mortgage payment, if you want to call it, can now basically go into our coffers and be utilized for programs or for research fund. So we're anticipating that our research fund is going to grow fairly quickly, and we're hoping that we'll be able to offer research grants through our research fund on a fairly regular basis, maybe every year and a half or every 2 years. So
I do want to add something also. Sorry for not adding it a minute ago, but this is a question Cal Myers had about the wind in regards to involvement with the quota fund users. So the wind will hurt all of the fisheries. This one particularly, because a lot of the species that are harvested through the quota fund, there is, I think, approximately 54 species. A lot of them are harvested in that area. So any wind operation that goes at sea, of course, it inhabits real estate. And without, that's where the fishermen are fishing. So what happens in this case, this wind energy operation will be 400 square miles, approximately. I think it's 396. So we'll call it 400 square miles. So that will be excluded from all fisheries. Now, they say you can fish there, but remember, you've got gear draping, literally draping from one platform to the next. All of the platforms will be interconnected, and then there will be main cables coming to the, or cable coming to the beach. So you can't fish. You can't put your fishing gear down. Fishing gear is very expensive, and obviously you'd probably lose it. So all of the fishermen that are working in that 400 square miles will have to vacate. Well, they'll have to go to somewhere else. So when they go somewhere else, there's probably someone else there. So we are increasing the pressure exponentially as these operations, or any other operation, is built at sea. So anything that includes fishermen, just keep pushing fishermen into smaller and smaller areas, catching more and more fish, and then, as usual, when those areas are impacted, the fishermen will be to blame. So, and that's the reality of it. It's just an area thing, you know. And you're going to, in this case, perhaps sacrifice food for power.
Gene, did you have a? Gene, did
you? Dwayne, thanks a lot for the presentation. I have no comments.
Thank you. To Member Witkowski. Mary, do you have any questions at this time?
Yeah, I had two. Thanks so much for the presentation. It was super interesting. My first question is whether there was anything that Morro Bay could do to be more attractive to commercial fishermen, like you mentioned the offload facilities, just other ideas for things like that. And then my second question is, you know, if some species are moving north, are there species that are potentially moving up from south of us that you're maybe investing in quota for?
I'll take the second one first. Yeah, the species aren't really moving north. It's just that the quota share is divided into kind of a north and south. And so, for example, sablefish, there's a sablefish north and a sablefish south quota. And that line is at the 36 line, which is Point Lopez, basically up in Big Sur. So it's not necessarily that the fish are moving north, that the NMFS, the National Marine Fisheries Service, has just broken that species out into two different areas, north and south. And so, like I said, some of the stuff we held were for species that were above the 40-10 line. And it's not that the fish themselves are migrating north, it's just that that's where NMFS put the break in the fishery. So there was really no reason for us to hold those quota shares anymore. As far as incentives, I think that was your question. Incentives locally, well, we've talked about it before at the quota fund board meetings. It's really chicken and egg thing. You know, we do have offloading facilities in Morro Bay, but what we lack is a processor. We don't have a processor anymore. You know, at one time, Jeremiah could give the answer. I just don't know. But at one time, I imagine in the 80s and 90s, probably in the 80s, I'm sure there were probably a dozen processors processing a variety of fish, whether it be salmon or rockfish or whatever. So, you know. So the question is, do offloaders show up here first, or not offloaders, sorry, processors show up here first and say, hey, we're open for fish, come down here and fish and land, or do the vessels need to come down here and try to make it work? And then a processor sees that and comes to Morro Bay. So there's this chicken and the egg thing. I think as far as like making conditions favorable, you know, if somebody comes to any entity in Morro Bay looking to set up a business to be a processor, I sure hope it's recognized that it should not be complicated for the, or shouldn't be more complicated for that you know, that business application, because we need them desperately.
Thank you.
All right. Guess it's me next, unless anybody else has any. My question is, perhaps you've answered it, but I guess I need a little bit more basic response. Your income that you get annually, what are the main sources?
The main sources, and just to be clear, our only sources, we don't receive any grant funds for the most part. We received some small grants in the past, but we don't receive annual grant funds, and we don't have any like philanthropic donations. Our revenue comes strictly from the leasing of our annual quota pounds to local fishermen and other fishermen up and down the coast, and our leasing of our limited entry permits, which isn't a big amount of money. Most of our money comes from the leasing of our quota pounds to fishermen.
Okay. I had another question. And I think that Mary asked it. So moving forward, is there any other questions? I know it was a presentation, should we open it up to ask anybody if there's any public comments on this subject, or?
Presentation normally is not public comment.
No public comments, okay. So at this point, I did want to make one comment as far as something that I was looking into before, and I know other people have looked into it, was to do a map of all the docks and all the boats that can sell off of their boat. And I think that still would be a really great thing to have. When COVID hit, a lot of people were coming from San Luis just to buy fish straight off the boats. We had a little bit more time and wanted to support a local economy. And I think maybe looking into that again would be nice with a Women's Fishermen's League. They were working on possibly doing something like that. So if the HAB can help in any way provide that outlet for sales on the coast, I would be interested in pursuing that. So at that point, thank you so very much. Really appreciate your presentation. And
okay. Thanks, guys. So like I said, if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, at this time we have an opening for public comment. And at the Veterans Hall, we do not see anybody in our crowd with a public comment. Hyland, do we have anybody online that would like to speak at this moment?
Thank you, Chair. It looks like we have a raised hand from Don Addis.
Wonderful. Let's hear from Councilmember Addis.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't think my hand meant to be raised. It was probably from earlier when you called on me, but that was a wonderful presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay, seeing no public comment at this time, we will move on to our consent calendar. Currently, we have one item in the consent calendar, which is A1. Would anyone like to pull A1 at this time? Member Witkowski, or Hyland, can we see if she is responding to wanting to pull A1?
Councilmember Witkowski, could you unmute, please?
Yeah.
If you want to pull A1, you say yes. If you do not see that you want to pull A1 at this time, nothing at this time.
No, I didn't see anything that I had questions about.
Okay, perfect. Seeing no one pulling A1, do we have a motion to receive and file as reported?
Make the motion to receive and file the Harbor Department status report.
I'll second that.
Okay, perfect. Do we want a vote at this point?
Yes. Member Witkowski?
Yes.
Member O'Brien?
Yes.
Member Myers?
Yes.
Member Green?
Yes.
Member Dowdy?
Yes.
And Chair Hansen?
Yes.
Your motion passes.
Thank you. Okay, we will be moving on to business items. We have our first business item, B1, which is the update from the Parking Management Paid Parking Ad Hoc Committee. The chair of that is Member Myers. Would you like to take the floor?
Sure, thank you. Just two updates. We have had 2 months off. Back in, I want to say, early March, we reached out to several members on the city council looking to talk about parking actually at the Rock. We thought that might be a good alternative, especially from a revenue perspective, given some of the funding shortfalls. We did get some feedback from the city manager and other members of the city council that there were some issues with that, mostly around the Coastal Commission. The direction we got is they wanted to focus the initial pilot program on along the Embarcadero to address capacity issues at parking. We did get assurance from the city manager that they would include that in the second version of the Walker study, and that's ongoing. I did get an update as of this afternoon from Scott Collins that Walker study is still ongoing. It's still probably a month or two away from getting any deliverables from that, although it's been ongoing for quite some time. But they did say that they would include the Rock side of it. It would be a future item, but there still has some legs. We got some buy-in from several of the council members. They still wanted to look at that. That's pretty much the extent I have at this point.
All right, thank you, Member Myers. Does anybody on the board have any questions for the committee chair? Seeing none present, Witkowski, Member Witkowski, do you have any comments?
No, so Cal did, well, actually, I guess. So Cal, did they say that they don't have a timeline of when that first one will complete? And then also, I guess, why are they already planning a second study from Walker?
They don't have a timeline, or at least Scott Collins wasn't able to share that with me. The second study was to get more into the nuts and bolts of what the pilot parking program would look like, the actual technology, the rules, the cost of doing it. Again, that level of minutia. The first Walker study was generally saying, yeah, you need a parking program, and they did, some counts of cars and whatnot. But this one would, again, try to address some of the things that we did in that previous paper about, employees and where the Rock or where the various people would park and time limits and dollar amounts and repainting curbs and signage and all those details. I think it's
okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right, Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue that might want to make a public comment at this time?
Thank you, Chair. We have no attendees in the queue.
Okay, and we have no attendees at the Feds Hall. So we will receive and file. We do not need to make a vote for that, correct? It is done. So our next item is B2, update from the Marine Services Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Our chair for that board is absent this evening, Chris Fail. But Cal, would you like to take
Unfortunately, because Chris is out, we had some grand plans to meet with several of the services this week. But he's been out because of his surgery, so I have no updates at this time. Very disappointing, but
All right, thank you very much. Perhaps next time I have a little bit more on the boat services. So we could just receive and file that unless anybody has any comments or questions about no comments or questions. All right, I'm going to move forward to item B3. We have the update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee and an oral update on the status of department's fiscal year. So at this point, do we want the chair to take it first or Eric?
How about the chair first?
Chair first. And that's Member Witkowski.
Yeah. Not a lot to report in the Finance Budget Ad Hoc Committee. I think based on like what Eric's been working on with the earmark request, the offered services and helping to get support letters, but other than that, don't have anything to report.
All right, thank you, Member Witkowski. Harbor Master Eric, you wanna?
So, quick report on the status of the budget. We are right in the thick of creating the next year's fiscal year's budget, including the capital improvement program. That's all part of it, and the measures money, the measures Q&E. So there's been some public discussion. I think we had a CFAC meeting. The Community Finance Advisory Committee looked at the measure money request, the sales tax measure request. This is the last week, it might have been a week before. But anyhow, they looked at that, so some stuff went public. City Council has not seen the budget at large yet, and we're still working on developing it through finance. Finance Department has a whole new program for budget development that we're all figuring out and getting used to, so that's been interesting. But in the end, the goal is that the budget gets much more public-facing. It's cloud-based, and the public can sign into the cloud, and there'll be a public-facing section of it that the public can go to and go look at details in the budget, as opposed to the big, thick book that, you know, very few people could decipher in the past. So hopefully it'll get better. So we'll see how that turns out. The Harbor Fund, in a nutshell, we're forecasting $2.4 million in revenues. That's an increase of about 6.5% over last year. About 79, almost 80% of that comes from our lease sites, the minimum and annual minimum rents and percent gross rents. And about 17% comes from all the boating related fees, slips, piers, moorings, liveaboards, and then there's a few leftover percent from the miscellaneous fees we collect. So that's kind of the revenues in a nutshell. On the expense side, it's about $2.3 million. So if you do your math, there's about $100,000 difference there. We're in the black. That's the good news, which I'll get to a little bit later. Of that $2.3 million, about 50% of that is personnel because, like most cities, most municipalities, it's a business and our business is people. We provide services for the most part, so it takes people to do that. So 50% is personnel. About 27% is transfers out. One of the biggest transfers out is the cost allocation program, the money we pay City Hall for the services we receive from City Hall and Public Works and all the other departments. There's some capital money that goes out in that transfer as well, the capital improvement program. IT, all the money we have to pay for all the programs, you know, Adobe, Acrobat, and Microsoft, all the suite of programs we have to buy into, so that's a pretty big chunk of money there. About 19% is services. Meaning legal services, folks we pay to work on our boats, contract services for various things, and then 3% supplies, and that's fuel, oil, the things we buy, nuts and bolts to keep the lights on and keep things operating. We've requested in this year's budget about $249,000, almost $250,000 in revenues in money from the sales tax measures, about $93,000 for the lifeguard program, which we got funded in this current year as well, about $68,000 to fund our reserve program, our reserve harbor patrol officer program. We're asking for that out of the measures revenues this year, and about $88,000 in disposal. Both lifeguards and disposal are in this year's budget. So we're asking for that again in addition to the reserve program. So about $249,250,000 out of the measures money. And then also out of the sales tax measures money, we're asking for $210,000 for the launch ramp to do basically the soft cost to replace the ramp itself, the concrete ramp, the engineering, planning, permitting, those sorts of things. So we're requesting some funding for that, out of which we'll develop a concept plan and cost estimating for the actual project work, and then probably go to Department of Boating and Waterways in February to apply for a grant for that. So from a working capital standpoint, our budget is doing okay. We're solvent. We're in the black to the tune of about $100,000. This year's budget does include some set aside for some reserve pots of money, which is good, and a couple other tentative things that the City Council is looking at. So on a working capital short-term basis, we're looking okay. From the fund balance standpoint, the long-term liabilities versus assets, we're not looking so good. That's mainly the pension liabilities that we're still facing, all the PERS reform that has taken place in the last 15 years. We're still working on that. That eventually goes away. We eventually get all that paid off, but for now, that's still a pretty large liability. But we've still got, you know, pretty large structural budget issue with the capital program, with funding all of our infrastructure. You know, that $600,000, $800,000 a year for the next 10-year figure that floats around. That problem is still not solved. We still, you know, we're put $100,000 a year isn't going to solve that problem. So we're still looking at other alternatives for that. You know, grants will make up some of it. I think in this year's budget, I've got about $30,000 worth of grants we're applying for, but that's pretty typical in any given year. So we're looking at other sources, one of those being congressional earmarks, which are back. They're not called earmarks anymore. I guess that's a bad word. It's called congressionally directed spending. We've requested of our Congressman Carberhall and Senators Feinstein and Padilla $3.8 million for the North T Pier for a major structural overhaul of the pier, replacement of all the utilities, the Harbor Patrol docks adjacent, fire suppression system. So we've made a request for that, and it was just announced today. Congressman Carbajal earmarked $1.5 million of that for us, so we'll see where that goes. We'll see if that survives the budget process. In terms of the Harbor Advisory Board and the HAB recommendations, as you might recall, we went through a list of measure funding opportunities and prioritized those. Number one on the HAB list was the lifeguard program, which we've put in for, and we'll see if that gets through the budget. Number two on the list was disposal, the trash cost. That's at $88,000. We put that in as well. Number three was North T Pier fire system. Didn't ask for that in measures money, but we made it a capital project pending congressional earmark spending. So we'll see where that $3.8 million goes. We just had a staffer from Senator Feinstein's office over in the Valley visit us today and look at the pier. So knock on wood and fingers crossed, they're paying attention to that, and hopefully that'll get funded. And number four on the list for the HAB recommendations was the North T Pier restroom. So far that hasn't made any progress. So that's kind of everything in a nutshell. Any questions?
All right, I'll look around the room. Member Myers, no. Member Green?
Yes, yeah, comments, it. But you have questions. Go ahead, Green.
So questions first. You already had a comment. Okay. So, Member Dowdy.
Yeah, Eric. Is there any fat or money for new personnel? It's an additional Harbor Patrol person or staff in your office, or any hope to have anything like that?
Right now, we with council approval of the funding, which we got a few months ago, we are undertaking a organizational assessment. Using a consultant, the Center for Organizational Effectiveness, they're an outfit down in nonprofit down in San Diego County that basically does this for a living and other things that help municipalities and cities and other organizations, other government organizations operate better. They were here the last couple of days. The two consultants working on it were here on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. They've interviewed a number of people, including some of you folks up here. They're looking at our organization. You know, we were 8 full-time people not that many years ago. We're down to 6 now. And so they're looking at, you know, everything we do, all the services we conduct, all the things we get into and our responsibilities and looking at our organization and you know, who we have on staff and what we may do into the future to manage our staff and potentially add more personnel in the future if it's warranted. So they're working on that right now. That won't get folded into this budget process. It's just not going to happen fast enough, and that takes time. So I suspect they'll sometime this summer they'll come out with their recommendations and their findings, and then we'll look at that. And I think we're going to be bringing that through the Harbor Advisory Board at some point and filter it through, then bring it to the council probably in the fall.
Okay, Member Green.
Yeah, I just want to add a couple things to Eric's effective summary, that there are public comment opportunities for people who want to chime in about city budget issues. CFAC is going to meet one more time in during May. That's an opportunity for folks to chime in, whether it's harbor related or not. And then there are city council budget sessions after that. Two sort of budgetary related items with respect to that, and Eric sort of alluded to them. Public Works did hire a new capital projects engineer, which isn't Harbor directly, but seems to have long-term capital projects on their radar, which is great. And at some public meetings, there has been talk of a part-time or full-time grant writer possibly in the future. So these are promising budgetary options, at least, that are being talked about.
Thank you, Member Green. I wish I should have brought the budgeting schedule, and I appreciate you bringing those two things up. And we are looking, you know, on the capital end of it, you know, we've always kind of served as our own public works department and run our own projects, which really isn't a very effective way when we're not the experts on that. And so we've been in a fair amount of discussion with Public Works and how do we morph our public projects over into the Public Works Department to where, you know, we basically write the check and they put together the program and run it and get the projects done. So we're looking at the possibility of doing that in the future as well. Because they do, you know, the wharf is, you know, it's going full tilt right now, but it's going to start slowing down and they'll be able to start focusing more attention on other public facilities in town besides just the wharf. So we're hoping that includes us as well.
Okay, Member Witkowski, do you have any questions at this time?
No, thanks.
I have a question. You mentioned that the budget or the income or the revenue that the Harbor Department has made this year is up, you said like 6.7%, is that what you said?
It's about 6.5. These are our revenue estimates.
Right.
Which they're, you know, on the lease front, we, you know, we do the CPI adjustments. We know what the minimum rents will be. The percent gross, it's a, you know, it's a forecasting, a little bit of a guess looking at, you know, what the sales tax and whatnot is trending, you know, and transient occupancy tax, and then we look at what we received last year and kind of compare and come up with a number. So those are just estimates.
Okay. And so it's still an estimate. Do you feel like the increase is coming from the economy, the fact that you have less Pipkin leases, people have moved off the 0% interest and possibly giving more revenue to the Harbor Department? Or is it are grants included in that? Is that maybe what bumped it up? Is there any source that you think that you can mention that you think made that work and increase for Harbor?
Grants, almost all the grants we receive are pass-throughs. You know, they're reimbursable grants. We spend the money and we get the money back. I usually don't put those into the budget because they, at least in analysis of the budget, because they kind of paint a false picture. When it's only $30,000, it's not a big item, but you know, back when we had that previous launch ramp grant that was, you know, $250,000, it sort of skews the picture of the budget, so I usually don't like to include those. In terms of the Pipkin leases or other lease things, you know, there has been an overall increase in lease revenues. Well, it's the first day, probably COVID. You know, people stopped traveling internationally, and the last 2 years, we've just had a lot of visitors, and they're spending a lot of money all over town, and then that created a pretty large bump. And I think out of that, a lot of people discovered the Central Coast that haven't discovered it before, and now they're spending more money here and even moving here and putting down roots, and that's increased our revenues. I think those COVID-based revenues are kind of plateau a little bit and drop down somewhat. And like I said, the leases overall, I think we've had some redevelopments that that, and some of them are pipkins, some of them may be pipkins, some of them not, but just overall, there's been a slight increase in the revenue generating capacity on the waterfront. Morro Bay Landing's come online, the last few years. Rose's Landing with the conversion to the hotel rooms, that's gonna start kicking in. Your site that you're redeveloping, that's gonna kick in a few years once it gets underway fully. And so all those things have helped, but we're still largely plateaued out on our lease revenue generating capacity. It's gotten better, but it's not going to solve the problem.
All right, thank you. And that's it for my questions. Should we open public comment? Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue that might want to comment on this item?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right, so I believe that we can just receive and file. Do we need to do roll call? Nope. Okay. So we're moving forward to our next and last item, which is B4, Harbor Advisory Board Member Public Engagement Outreach Assignments. So I'm going to go this route today. So we're going to go Member Dowdy.
Well, let's see. The sport fishing complexes are doing a thriving business with bottom fish and some salmon. And as far as mariculture, seems like the eelgrass has backed off a little bit, so they're out there harvesting their oysters. So looks like everything's moving right along.
All right, thank you, Member Dowdy. Moving on to Member O'Brien.
Yeah, thank you, Charisse. I did have a couple of classes on the waterfront here from Cal Poly in the last 3 weeks or so. And one of them was a marine science class, and they're generally the classes that we bring around the waterfront and explain how things work. And then it was interesting, the second class that we had was an architecture class. And never thought about that type. We have marine architecture, but they were interested, and he wanted to bring the class around, and they're interested in how everything is put together in marine life, such as we have small spaces that we live in on vessels and so forth, and make use of vessels since the beginning of time, have sought for space. Space is always an important commodity on a vessel. And so they're interested in looking into the various ways that space is maximized on vessels and so forth, and also how they work. And one of the things, it's nice to be here. I could have done this or mentioned this on a previous meeting, but I'm going to do it again. I encourage, spent a little bit of time at the museum and so forth, and I have been encouraging some of the schools around town and so forth to visit because of some of the interesting things that we have at the museum, and one of them is always seems that nobody realizes that we were attacked here in World War II. And the Montebello was sunk up the coast towards Point Sur, and that was the one and only vessel on this coast attacked and sunk by the Japanese in World War II. It's very important. We have the boat that rescued them at the museum. We have the life jacket worn by the skipper of the rescue boat, signed, and in the history behind it. And so in visiting the schools, I ran into a lot of people in the schools that weren't even aware of that. So I encouraged them to come to the museum and look into it and bring the kids as field trips, because there's some interesting things, I think, that will learned there that, again, people didn't seem to realize that these events took place here. Morro Bay played a significant role in the rescue and return, safe return of the crew.
Everybody. Everybody was saved, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes. So thank you, Gene. Yeah. I believe there was 20, I think it was, the number is 26 aboard the vessel, but you're right, Gene. Everyone was saved that day, so no loss of life at all. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Member O'Brien. Going to Member Green.
My two outreach groups, Cal Poly and the Planning Commission here in Morro Bay. I'll start with Cal Poly. I don't have much to announce regarding Cal Poly, except to say that if any stakeholders here in town have ideas about projects that Cal Poly students might be interested in working on, or employment opportunities, or internship opportunities, or anything like that. I teach in the English department, but I teach first, second, third, or fourth year general education students that are always looking for some kind of project, some sort of communication opportunity, marketing, sometimes business, sometimes architecture, like Jeremiah was talking about. Engineering, certainly, even ag. So if you see opportunities, whether it's the fishing industry, someone, maybe even harbor department or waterfront leaseholders, please just reach out to me and maybe I can put you in contact with the right people. As far as the Planning Commission, an item came up. So I'm on the subcommittee for the Public Benefits Subcommittee with Mike Rodriguez and Joe Engrafia. And so we actually presented a 21-page report last month regarding public benefits and potential processes that might be sort of put into place. The process is continuing to work through the Planning Commission and is going to be up at an upcoming Planning Commission meeting again, the public benefits process. But one item on that list or on that agenda item is what we've been referring to as kind of a general public benefits menu, which would be the kind of thing that the planning department, community development, could hand to bigger developers in town, especially in our planned development zones like the waterfront, who are proposing projects that require public benefits of some kind. And so the idea there is that we can not add to the process, but sort of streamline the process and present ideas of the kinds of things that citizens in Morro Bay appreciate seeing in projects so that those developers can proactively present some of those public benefits. So there's not necessarily an action item for us here or the general public other than to keep paying attention to the Planning Commission. If you want to proactively submit ideas for public benefits, like some examples are more EV chargers in parking areas, or a wider harbor walk, or improved streets and sidewalks in addition to the required parts that your lot is already required to provide. So like that kind of small scale infrastructure improvements, but it can go as high as like reserving an acre of your land to affordable housing. You know, and dreaming big on the top end of that. So the menu was published as part of this 21-page report last month, and it will come up again in June, and the public will have an opportunity to chime in and add more items to that list, because we were just a subcommittee of three and we used other cities as sort of a benchmark, and then came up with some ideas that feel appropriate for Morro Bay. So if anyone on this advisory board has ideas, you can certainly send them to the Planning Commission, or you could send them now preemptively, or you could wait until June and chime into the meeting. And the public can certainly chime in as well once they see that on the Planning Commission agenda item in June. We'll see, late May or June, TBD. That's it.
Member Myers.
To follow, Sean. I have no outreach updates at this time. Thank you.
Right. Member Witkowski?
Yeah, I don't have anything from Coast Guard Auxiliary or the State Park. For the Yacht Club had an in-person opening day, which is great. Also donated a bunch of sails, actually, to Cal Poly. And I think it was an architecture class also that was building cool stuff with the used sails. And also youth sailing will be starting for the summer. So we'll probably see them out on the water. That's it.
Okay, thank you so very much. All right, that leads to me. I have, one of them is the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders and businesses along the waterfront. Currently, they have been working on a document to send to the City Council. It covers current events and issues like leaseholders that are interested in property management approach from the Harbor Department, within it or an outside source, things like parking, vista, wind energy. This document will go through City Council first and most likely will come to our board for review and comments. Can't read my writing. Perhaps a presentation. Yes. The other part is schools, elementary schools and whatnot. I had an opportunity with the Chamber of Commerce to be on a committee that chose applicants for financial aid, a scholarship for college-bound students. It was very rewarding. I really enjoyed it, and it also heart-wrenching to realize that the different struggles this age is going through compared to mine or our parents or grandparents. It's different going through COVID, and there was a lot of mental health issues, and so I think that it's pretty unique to be a part of giving a scholarship and reading about the things that are going on with our youth today. To donate to some of these nonprofits that provide the scholarships, there's places like the Rotary and the Chamber, and you can also establish your own scholarship. There are a lot of worthy applicants out there. To know that some of them have like 4.5 GPAs and they did that while they were all working at home in such a different environment blows my mind. And so it's worth looking into. Also, I've noticed personally and online and everything that there are an abundance of jobs available at this time. So on the Embarcadero, there are a ton of help wanted signs, now hiring. So if you know anybody, tell them, tell everyone. I think that it's time to get us all back into work mode. And I know that the local businesses need your help. If you're out there looking for a job, check out the Embarcadero and pretty much everywhere. So Morro Bay Beautiful is doing a new campaign for beautifying our town. Particularly, they go around, they pick up cigarette butts. They're the ones that did the art on the trash cans. Yeah, I got that right. And they've been noticing a lot of, not graffiti, but taking stickers and slapping them onto signs and whatnot. So they want everybody to know that you can buy your stickers from local businesses and put them on your water bottles, on your phones, and on your cars, but please not on the signs and their beautiful trash cans that they took a lot of time to put together. I did have one question, so if anybody has any questions, go for it. Yes, Dowdy.
Charisse, on your lease document, is that going to go to the council first or going to the Harbor Advisory Board first? The document you guys are working on?
The master leaseholders, the EML, it will go to the City Council first. They wanted to go through them before that goes to us. I definitely brought that up. I'm like, let's see this. But they wanted to go to the City Council. I have a question for Sean. One of the things that I think is really important, especially with that public benefits thing, is that we get community involvement. And not that they're telling you to move forward with that, and I know City Council might not ask you to move forward with it, but a booth might be a really cool way. You know, just have like a little of menu of your things and just see what the community actually says is most important to them. So I know that the Avo Marg Fest is happening and I should know that, but it's happening, I believe, in March or April of, well, anyway, we'll find that out. Does anybody know when the Avo Marg Fest is happening?
It's in September, I believe.
September, I don't know the dates, it used to be in, okay, so September, and anyway, that, I think that would be a really great way to poll the community and see what public benefits really are needed at this time.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I can bring that up at the next Planning Commission meeting. And where it got left off at the last Planning Commission meeting was that the planning commissioners wanted to give themselves 30 days to think over how best to solicit all of that kind of feedback and then approach the advisory boards, council, and the community with a outreach program to start building that list. So that's a good starting point. And we can also use some of these surveys that we've contracted in the past to get some of the citizen feedback.
Okay, great. Thank you. That just needs to move on to our next item. Seeing no other questions, do we want to do a public comment search, Highland, to see if anybody has a raised hands in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, seeing none here at the Vets Hall, we're going to move forward to item C, declaration of future agenda items. Does any member have a future agenda item that they would like to bring forth at this time?
Agenda item.
No, none at this time. I don't hear anything from Member Witkowski, so I'm going to move forward. And that's it. We did it. We met in person. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate our presentation today.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, and thanks for joining us, and thanks for watching the recording. have a good night.
So the public couldn't see us that whole time, I don't think?
I think they could. I think that just shows us what's on his computer screen.
I think it did, and he probably should have turned it off.